And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 225. The pockets are done, folks. So now we are doing our hitter roadmap for the 2025 fantasy baseball season. For your last week of drafting here, we're going to go ADP 300-1, give you our thoughts on how to approach that from a hitting perspective. Pitching comes later this week. Before we get to all that, you can find me on Twitter at BDIntrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. I vented to you about this earlier, and you're going to get it again. You're going to get it again because I woke up this morning, Bubba, eager to check the Tokyo series, the box score, what happened, did that. All of a sudden realized Freddie Freeman was scratched. I was like, oh, that kind of sucks. Scratched with rib soreness. I was like, whatever. That kind of sucks. I have a lot of Freddie Freeman. People couldn't tell. I see a tweet. Here's the actual tweet. I see a tweet that says, Dave Roberts said Freddie Freeman's rib issue is not as severe, but in the same spot as the rib cartilage he tore in last year's postseason. What? That's how my day started. I had no idea. So that was.
I don't think anybody did. I think the Dodgers knew, but no one else knew. It sounds like
I miss stuff all the time, as you know, as listeners know. Like I am not good about being up to date on things. I went back and looked through like RotoWire things, and I saw nothing. Everything was about the ankle, which I knew was a risk going in. But yeah, now apparently my guy tore rib cartilage last year and is having some pain there. So I don't know, that maybe that's the vent/news portion of our episode tonight, but I was not in a good mood this morning when I saw that. Season's here.
And trust me, if I knew about it throughout the offseason, you would have heard about it every time you raved about Freddie Freeman. So it was definitely under the radar because I do pay attention to way too much news. So it definitely flew under the radar in this one. Like, and the weirdest part is we knew he hurt his ankle. He had surgery right away to repair his ankle.
Yep.
Still nothing about anything else the entire time. So you have Freddie Freeman, who says he has a 75% chance to play in Wednesday's game. So we'll wake up Ryan and we'll see if he played or not. We both agree he should just sit out till the opening day.
There's no reason. Yeah.
But then you have Mookie Betts now, who's lost, I believe it was 13 pounds due to his virus. He was taking ground balls, felt weak, decided not to play. We talked about Kyber Ruiz last season, who had his injuries and the weight loss.
The Red Sox this year.
Red Sox, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how Mookie, because I hadn't seen it until today, some video of the infield drills Mookie was trying to complete the other day, and he just looked bad.
Oh, yeah, I saw those. Like,
that looked like me when I'm hungover after like three nights in college, bad, but he's actually just weak from illness. So that's like the Sunday of a 3-day golf trip. That's what that was. That's walking to the first tee.
I was trying to equate it to something like in my life, and like I don't.
That'll be us Monday morning when we get back from Vegas. I think the
golf trip parallel is good because I just work, so I just sit here. I don't move around like you, but. Yeah, that is like day three of the golf trip, day three of the Vegas trip. He did not look like he wanted to be there.
Yeah, the best I can give is my bachelor party was we flew in on a Thursday and left on a Monday morning for conference title weekend, and that Monday morning check. Yeah, that Monday morning checkout. I had an arm over one friend. And I like took a nap on one of the couches at the checkout stand because I just couldn't function. Then on the plane, they made sure all of us sat on the back of the Southwest plane because it was bad. It was bad. It's a bad scene for the whole crew. It was a bad scene.
So, hey, glad I'm sharing an Airbnb with you.
Yeah, that was
times have changed.
That was a long time ago. Long time ago. That's when I could drink beer. So yeah, long, long time ago. But I digress. Speaking of Vegas, we will be taking off in a couple days. We will be in Las Vegas, which will be quite the scene. We're looking forward to checking it all out. That's for sure.
Yeah, the Thursday show will be pre-recorded, so we won't be live Thursday night for our hundreds of live viewers watching us this evening. We'll pre-record that one so we can at least try and get to bed a little bit early. And then, yeah, we've got a lot of cool stuff planned. Bubba's got some equipment he's bringing. We're going to see what happens. We're not going to promise anything.
For recording, folks. Some
yes, recording equipment. Did I just say equipment?
Yes.
Recording video equipment. I got some fun things in the hopper, but I feel like we're just playing it kind of loose. Like however it goes, it goes. We'll put some good stuff out there, but we don't know exactly, you know, how it's all going to go yet. But either way, we'll have a good time.
Should be fun. Should get a lot of people overreacting to Tanner Scott's first save.
John Birdie's steal.
Yeah, Curlin projected two steals over the series. Gets one in the first game, so Curlin's on to something there. Yamamoto
projected two steals for John Birdie.
He said before, like when he saw Birdie in the lineup, he says, "I can't wait to see the overreaction in the main events this weekend when John Birdie ends with two saves in Japan." So he's already got one of the two after game one. So that's a pretty good stuff there as well, because he will get a bump because of those saves. Got main event night. We've seen this time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that'll do that. Let's get into our pockets, my friend. Or not pockets, our roadmap.
Roadmap. Lack of a better term. That's a pretty good term. I mean, so we're basically going to treat this as...
Blueprint, roadmap. Yeah.
It works. Some type of like marketing term, like path to success. Knowing us or knowing me, it'll be a path somewhere else. But the general idea for this thing is, you know, you guys are listening. You've got maybe one or two drafts left. There's a week left of drafts. I know we just went through kind of all 50, you know, we did five shows of 50 picks in pretty good detail. And I think we both understand that, I don't know if everyone got to every single one of those. So what we're trying to do with this is almost like a, I don't know, like a crash course, cram session type of thing to how we would ideally want to build, if we're in a draft this past week, how we would ideally want to build the hitting side of our teams. And so what we're going to do with this exercise is we're going to start from, and this is kind of practicing what we preach, start from the back. Like where Bubba was on his plane ride home, the bachelor party. We're gonna start from the back, and then we're gonna work our way selves forward, because I think it's great to build and look at what you like in these middle to late rounds, and that dictates what you do in the first few rounds, because everybody's good in the first few rounds. It's more how do you want to build the team. So that's the general plan for tonight. We're gonna go through in 50 pick increments, start from 250 to 300. We'll just kind of chit-chat on generally what we like, position-wise, category-wise, and then throw out a few names, which, again, loyal listeners to the show, these will probably be similar names that you've been used to all draft season. But again, we kind of want to have this kind of crash course for everybody in kind of an hour package to kind of get that roadmap for the last week of draft season.
Yep, for sure. It'll be a good one. And for those, again, Ryan mentioned Thursday's show will be pre-recorded. So if you have any questions about this show or a pitching roadmap or just for your drafts this weekend, hit us up throughout the week. We'll add those to the end of Thursday's show for you as well.
The other thing I'm going to do real quick is I'm going to take notes as we're going. So we're going to try that. Let's see how I can multitask. And then we'll put all the notes in a Patreon post for all the subscribers. So it'll be just kind of if you miss the show or whatever, it'll all be there in one. Our show notes basically will be there in one spot for folks who were signed up to the Patreon.
Adam, dumb question. You're not writing these down by hand, are you?
Jesus. Yeah, that was a dumb question. Yeah, I am typing.
Just trying to see if you came to the strong side on that one.
Never.
All right, let's get to it. 300 to 250. Again, this is the hitting side. And when we look at these bloom boards, Ryan, it's going to be really red for the first few boards, because it's in relation to all hitters in the top 300, I believe.
Yep.
And why don't you give us a little more on the boards we'll be looking at, I guess, before we dive in. I kind of got to the easy part of it.
Yes. Yeah, sure. So these are, I mean, similar as our pockets of ADP. This is all ADP. This is over the last 2 days of 12-team drafts on the NFBC, so this is super fresh data. A lot has changed even since we've done our pockets of ADP shows, even just a week ago, 10 days ago, whatever. And then the projections are still the same. They're pulled from Fangraphs. It's Steamer and Derek Hardy's the Bat X. Combine those two. We've got projections shown for batting average, homers, and steals by ADP. So we can just kind of see where these are at. And yeah, it's all color-coded by the entire top 300 hitters. So basically, we're looking at a lot of your what'd you cook on this past weekend for 800 people? Corned beef?
Corned beef, Red. It's a lot of corned beef, Red. Yeah, that's for sure. It's going to be the kind of red we're going to see on Saturday night in Vegas, Bloomfield. A lot of that rare steak red coming your way on Saturday night. All right, so 300 to 250. When we look at this pocket, the first things I see is you have a handful of guys hitting 15-plus homers, not a lot of double-digit steals. I think as we know when we talked about our pockets of ADP, this is kind of where you start taking your shots. Yeah. Maybe fill a final spot on your roster if you need to. So without stealing all the thunder, what else are you looking at in this back end, this back 50?
How I generally look at is, yeah, at this late in the draft, you are kind of taking your shots, like you said. I take more of a player-centric approach to this and just target the players that I like the most, because there is a chance, especially in 12-teamers, that these guys may not be on your roster for very long into the season. So I think you just want to take a shot on the player and then work around that earlier on, as opposed to trying to kind of build out a position or a category, because like you said, I mean, basically all the projections for these guys are pretty brutal. Like there's some green for stolen bases. Like you got Tyler Fitzgerald, Trevor Story, RIP Parker Meadows projected for 17 stolen bases. Talk about
dropping all the
That's one that has changed. Parker Meadows barely makes this list with a 299 ADP over the last 2 days. But there's just not a lot of like that. There's some batting average, but it's Alec Burleson and Brendan Donovan, who we each vomit in our mouth when we say that. So it's just pick the player you like to break out the most, I think, and then work around that. If I'm going to name a couple players, I will go, and not to steal your thunder, but I have been, and Thairo Estrada is like my gold standard late pick. He's going at pick 296. Would love to have him at a middle infield spot. Or even utility at this point, if you're filling out the end of your hitter roster in shallower leagues. And then also Connor Norby at third base is going at pick 278. And, you know, the projections, again, are not great. But those two guys, I am happy to get. In a draft, you can't get everything. So, like, realistically, I'm probably not getting both of those guys on a bunch of teams. But I want to get at least one of those for that last middle or corner spot, Norby or Thairo Estrada. I think both of those guys just have a ton of upside. And honestly, in Thairo's case, I think a decent floor this late in the draft.
Thairo brings a great floor to this point in the draft. Like if he completely tanks, he goes to AAA, makes an easy drop. He probably gets DFA, doesn't go to AAA, makes for an easy drop. Otherwise, you got a guy that's probably going 15-20 with a good batting average, maybe more. So I don't mind Thairo at all. It's just, it comes down to, we've talked about maybe punting second base. If you're punting second base, you take him a lot higher than 296, because you got to make sure you get him. Because if you don't, you're in insane trouble at that point in the draft. But to your point, fully agree there. When I'm looking at this part first, like when we talk about the pitching side, we love the pitching in this range much more than the hitting. We talked about that in the pockets. When I looked at just names I wanted to highlight, I'm like, there's guys I like, but there's not massive targets per se. But a guy that I have talked about a lot is Christopher Morel. I keep buying, getting out of the trop, going to the minor league park. We know the power is – you're not going to get a lot of guys here that could hit 30 home runs and you wouldn't be as surprised. Like, I'm not saying he will, but he's got 30 home run power in Christopher Morel. He also – you know, the batting average is a massive concern with him, so I'm not going to sugarcoat that by any means. But what he brings to the table, second base, third base, and he's going to get outfield. So when you're looking at a late pick to kind of help with depth on your roster to fill out MICI and outfield, that is huge to start the season. I think that's it kind of gives him more of a boost for me, even though there are those, you know, maybe not steals a lot, the batting average concerns. So Morel is a guy that I continue to circle, continue to target in drafts. And the other one, similar to having that kind of flexibility, I like is Joey Ortiz, who I know you like as well. He's going to be shortstop, third base.
Official today.
Yep, became official. So you're going to get the MICI within 10 games. Projections aren't the biggest fans. They got him 248, 12, and 11. But It's kind of because we haven't seen Joey Ortiz be Joey Ortiz yet. I've mentioned in on these shows and articles and stuff, he's got yo-yoed around a lot last year. Still played 142 games, which I thought was pretty crazy when I look back on it. Felt like he didn't play that much last year. So the stat line was still kind of underwhelming with that many games. But I feel like it's the full season, being the dude, another year under his belt, still pretty young. I think it's a 15-15 floor with Joey Ortiz with a like a 260 batting average, which this late in the draft, pretty solid. It's kind of what you want with Tyro in theory. But now with Joey Ortiz, you're going to get more flexibility around the infield. So those are two guys I've been seeing myself take a lot here, but there's a lot of, I guess, riskier plays that, you know, the boomer bust type guys in this range too, depending on what your style is.
I think another big takeaway is, I mean, we just named all corner and middle infield guys. Like, I think I would want to have one or both of those spots still open by the time I get to this point in the draft, right? Because I'll bring up catchers. I'll be the first to bring up catchers for you. There's Alejandro Kirk and Joey Bart. Like, sure, if you want to take a second catcher, maybe you go there. I don't love a lot of the outfielders here. Again, we don't need to talk about every single person listed, but there's only a couple outfielders I like even going in this group. So again, that dictates your decision making earlier in the draft. If I have to pick between all else equal, like a fifth outfielder or a corner, when or even fourth outfielder in a corner or a middle and picks 200 to 250, I may lean outfield because I know I could get one of Estrada, Ortiz, Morel, or Norby in this last group and fill out my infield. So that's another kind of takeaway I'm jotting down in our notes here as well.
Well, and it's also just for all the drafts we've done for one, but just remembering the pockets, 300 and beyond, there's a lot more outfielders I'll take my darts on. And there's a lot less corners, I guess, or middles that I like the flavor of. So you take these guys here, take your chances on outfield later. Like Jung-Hoo Lee, the MRI on his back came back good, but he's an average guy, maybe has a little more pop than you expect, but nothing too crazy there. The other things, the players that stood out here, it's like, do you take your Christian Campbell gambles?
I was going to ask you about
gambles, stuff like that. So, yeah.
I was going to ask about Christian Campbell because it sounds like he's making the team.
That's how it sounded. It was still kind of cryptic the way it came out on Tuesday. Like it's not 100%, but it's like feels like it's about 90, 95 right about now. So until I see that, like with the Brewers, they said Bryce Terang, second base, Joey Ortiz, shortstop. Boom. It's out there. Like if I can hear something like that with Campbell, who I do think is the second baseman to start the season, like honestly, I think the second that happens, when we see the main event in Vegas this weekend, dude,
he ain't going 290.
Nah. He's probably going closer to 191 than 291.
It will be interesting to see that inflation when we walk around the Vegas room Saturday morning because, yeah, it will not be 291. And I don't know. I mean, I always get lazy and say, oh, if insert prospect name here, if he makes the team, surely the team's going to play him every day. I would like to hope that's the case with Christian Campbell and the Red Sox. You never quite know. But, yeah, if Christian Campbell makes the team, he's not going 291.
Yeah, I'm with you there. The other player I did want to mention, he's boring, but to me, boring is beautiful. And again, this also goes to the 300 and beyond. You mentioned corner guys, but a lot of these corner guys feel like they are strictly corners where you have Nathaniel Lowe here, who if you punt first base, could legit be a first baseman. I think he runs more in Washington with that team. Because in the next pocket, you'll have like your Bells, your Torkelsons, your Santanas, kind of these – yeah. Who knows type range. I only said part of his name for you, so you didn't completely lose it. But I think like Nathaniel Lowe kind of brings that spot. If he did kind of wait on first base, like you better get snapping on that one.
Yeah, because there's a few first basemen going in the next pocket that or in the earlier pocket that we will talk about next. It's weird talking about it going backwards, that I like to. But yeah, that's a good call out on your guy, Nathaniel Lowe.
Yeah, just want to throw him out there real quick. We got a question in the chat that I wanted to get to. I don't know where he is in the pockets here because I do not see him. But
Rafael is 206.
I'll save him. I'll save him for the next round then. So I'm glad I'll just put a star there, and go with that. Michael C is saying that on Monday there was a note on RotoWire that sounded like Hamilton was the guy at first. Seems fuzzy. I don't know which Hamilton we are speaking of. Am I misremembering?
Boston something? Hamilton. I can never get his first name.
At first.
Ian Hamilton. Josh Hamilton.
David.
No, at first, not at first base, but at first, like.
That's where I was confused. Yes, David Hamilton at second.
Not
base.
At first base, but at first, he heard the news.
Yes, gotcha. That makes more sense to me. Okay, 10-4, gotcha. All right. Anything else on 250 to 300?
No, not now that we sufficiently botched that one, we can move on.
That's what I'm good at. This is how we roll, folks. Keep it going. All right, let's get 200 to 250 here, where things change a little bit here. I actually made some notes to discuss on this one. So what do you see at first when you look at this next section of 200 to 250?
Well, good for it. You made the notes. You can lead off.
For me, like, especially looking at this screen where you have 200 to 300, this is the last kind of area of really good steals targets to me. You mentioned how it's kind of limited to guys in the last pocket. Here you have Nico Horner, who I'm starting to buy in on this dip on ADP because he's expected to be ready for opening day. It's still a maybe, but at this ADP, he could be a middle infield to get you 25-plus bags. You got Zach Neto at 20, who's finally throwing to first base. Still a long ways to go in my mind. Mikel Garcia at 25, Cedric Mullins at 27, Slick Willie, the mascot, at 18, Jake McCarthy at 27, Garrett Mitchell, of course, going to be way more than 18, Geloff at 21, so on and so forth. So you have at least, you know, 5, 6, 20-plus guys in this range, and you have a few more 15-plus guys. So it's a pocket I think you can, you know, we talk about as we go through this, we'll talk, you know, get your power early because you can get speed late. Here's the perfect example of where you can get speed late.
Yes, for sure. That's a good call. I did not notice that at first, but especially compounding the fact that, like we just said, there is like no speed in the 250 to 300 group. Yeah, this is a really good place to kind of get that last 25-30 stolen base guy. And it's not like these 25-30 stolen base guys are like a Bryce Terang, like a one-trick pony, like an old Malik Smith or a Adalberto Mondesi, a Esteri Ruiz, like... Jake McCarthy can hit for batting average. Cedric Mullins can hit for some power. Nico Horner can hit for batting average. Neto can do everything if he's healthy. Like all those, Garrett Mitchell, you know, can't have everything with this group.
Had to do it.
But hell, I mean, TJ Friedel, like these are speed guys who are also good in other spots. So I like that call. I think if you're behind on speed and you're in this 200, 250 type range, it's kind of your last shot to try and make up for it. And with some of these guys, you can do so without setting yourself too far back in any other category, which is saying a lot for post 200 picks, in my opinion. So I think that's a good call out. And it just speaks to, I think, that the depth of the hitters in this portion of the draft.
It speaks to the depth, and it's just another point to the steals part here is you're probably starting these guys, where in the next pocket, you might start them, but you also might be coming off the bench, or they're like an in-and-out type stream, where some of these guys, like I said, Mullins might be your fifth outfielder. Like you might be rolling with said, Nico Horner might be your second baseman or middle infielder. Like these are like Jonathan India is down there. Not, we didn't talk steals, but a lot of these second basemen are guys you're going to start probably. So getting them locked in with the steals, I think, is a pretty good place to be for sure.
All right. My big takeaway from this group as well with 200 to 250. So I mentioned from the 250 to 300 group, didn't like many outfielders, liked a lot more infielders. That kind of totally flips with 200 to 250 for me, at least. This is where I want to grab at least my fourth outfielder. I think even in 12s or 15s, I think in 12s, I say fourth because you can stream that fifth outfield spot pretty well in 12 teamers, given the replacement level that's available. In 15s, it's a little bit tougher, but you can also, I can't sit here and say, oh, I need to fill up my entire outfield by pick 245. In 15s, you've got other holes to fill as well. So typically trying to get my fourth outfielder here. And basically, I'm not going to repeat all the names you just said in outfield, but you kind of just listed a bunch of outfield names that I like. I will add TJ Friedel, who we talked about last show. I think they're all blend together to me at this point. George Springer as well, as long as he stays healthy, is someone who is going to play every day. And when we get to the point of a platoonville with some of these outfielders, I think that's an asset. So this is where, given the number of, hell, even like a Lourdes Gurriel Jr., their projections aren't that great for him. 15 homers, 5 steals. I'd probably take the over on 15 homers from Lourdes, but great a really good batting average. and yeah, a really good floor. So like, there's just different types of options. It's not only that there are a lot of outfielders I like, there's different types of outfielders that can help you at different spots. So this, I think this is a great place to grab that fourth outfielder in 200 to 250.
Yeah, for me, it's, I kind of want it to be more my fifth outfielder potentially, but I get where you're saying, like, you waited. I get it. They fit the fourth outfield mode pretty well, because the pockets before this, I think, is one that I'd like to get, you know, by fourth by. But a couple other things here, and I'll do it this time. I like to have my second catcher by the end of this. I'll say that much, because you have Kyber Ruiz, you have Connor Wong, you have Ivan Herrera. Obviously, Stevenson's falling because he's hurt now. Ryan Jeffers. Like, pretty much, I have obviously a lot of Stevenson because things have changed there. Don't mind Herrera, but I'm kind of souring on him of late. Kyber Ruiz has been like my last guy, kind of.
Unless I kind of really miss.
So I don't want to go too much farther than him, is my point. So I'd make sure to get that wrapped up by here, would be my point on that one.
Yeah. I have typically tried to make Kyber Ruiz my last catcher at this point. And if not, then I just say, kind of screw it. I'm gonna try and stream it. I mean, we got to call out the mascot and the off-brand mascot, Willie Castro, going at 222. I think more so in 15 teamers, but super useful piece at second, third, short, and outfield. Injuries already to the Minnesota infield. Unfortunately, Royce Lewis's hamstring exploded mid-auction for me on Sunday.
Tofu.
Yeah, on my Beat the Bloom team with George Kirby, Tyler Stevenson, and some other Jesus Sanchez. So that team's off to a roaring start as I start to do fab.
You're gonna have some tough decisions to make on that first fab run.
Yeah. Like, is Jesus a cut in a 12 teamer?
Probably. Yes, unfortunately. So. Unfortunately.
Yeah, yes. I'm gonna keep Royce as an injury stash. Yeah. So anyway. But yeah, I think Willie Castro is a fine move. I think even off-brand mascot Michael Garcia is not bad. Good batting average. I think the stolen bases are still there. You can get some kind of good multi-position eligibility with those two guys.
Yep, and Balin's with you on this. He says, I especially like Michael Garcia and his hard hit rates. Yes, the rates.
Yeah,
pretty solid. Pretty solid.
He was pretty unfortunate last year.
The other thing I'll mention besides catchers here, like, you like the outfield. A lot of second basemen in this range. A lot of second basemen in this range. This is why we talk about waiting. Again, it's Nico, Mikel Garcia, Willie Castro, if you want, Jonathan India, who's been a popular one, Geloff, Gleyber Torres. So it's one of the bigger, like, more crowded second base regions, which leads into the last 50 we just talked about. So this is a good section. These 100 picks was a good spot to target your second baseman if you're waiting.
Yeah, at least for me, I kind of like, especially at cost, I like the second baseman in the later group more than I do this group. But that's just because I'm not that big of a, like, India guy, Geloff guy. But it's a good point. You do have options at second base, which, again, just goes back to the point that both of us have kind of made this draft season, is if you need to wait on a position, I think second base is your move.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, like, my last draft I did, that standalone 12 teamer that I did, I would look at second baseman's going and I'm like, I'm just gonna wait. I kept telling myself, wait, because we know what's coming. And just that little knowledge helped me go and take somebody else. Now, will it help me win? We'll see. But it helped me in the moment, that's for sure. Last thing I have here, unless you have more, lots of speed, not a ton of big power bats. You got Soler, Buxton, if you can trust them, Reese's Pieces. Yeah. And Springer, those are your only 20 plus home run bats, and Royce, I guess, but that's not gonna be 20
Royce
anymore.
And Buxton being two of the five. Agreed. Yeah, not that many good power bats, which this is why we build from where we're starting in this show forward. This is why you need to get, I think, power with batting average in those early rounds, because I mean, look at these projections. It's a great point. They're just, the speed is much more plentiful than power is at this point in the draft.
Yeah. When I had Dustin McComas on this week, he was talking about SGP and how it makes those batting average power guys stand out even more, like the Yordans of the world. And it makes more and more sense as we do shows like this to change it up for sure.
All right. Want to get to Rafaela?
Yes, let's get to the question here from Mr. Roger Bloomfield. How much do you think Rafaela will improve hitting if he plays one position?
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I certainly think it helps, right? It can't hurt. I'm pretty low on Rafaela this year. I just didn't see much in his, like, you're kind of, I think you're banking on year two improvement from Rafaela, which could definitely happen. I mean, he's young. Red Sox obviously believe in him. And yeah, maybe going to one position helps, but he has not been a target of mine at 206. There's middle infielders and outfielders I like better than Rafaela. And the multi-position eligibility isn't, for me, enough to make up for it.
Two things. I think it will help him to at least just get like a stable footing, maybe not a ceiling, but like a really good floor with Rafaela. So I like that. I'm kind of mad at myself. I'm like doing some work lately. I started to realize like I have FOMO picks or certain players I should probably have more shares of. I don't have any Rafaela, and I had a ton of him in recent season, like last year. I was all about him last season, the shortstop outfield, plays great defense. I just pulled up his Fangraphs, like 152 games, 15 homers, 19 steals, hit 246, 70 runs, 75 RBIs. Like, that's not a bad stat line right here. That's a pretty darn good stat line at this point of the draft. Projections have him going lower than that. So it's like, do you believe the projections or do you believe what he did next year? Do you believe he can go to a next level? There's layers to this, of course, when you look at Rafaela. Going to be hitting towards the bottom of the Boston order. That'll be one thing. But I just feel like it's the guys that I've just kind of blanked out. And I think it's because he was super streaky last year. I remember having to like drop him in 12s and stuff, and it was very frustrating. But to Raj's question, I think playing just one position will help him, is the way I look at it. And I say all these things without a share, which is kind of crappy.
I haven't gotten the FOMO yet, but I guess I probably won't.
You won't either. I don't think you. Good to know. Ryan won't be drafting him in Vegas on Sunday. Write that down.
Yeah, you got me. Oh, this one's tougher to see. Sorry, people.
Yeah, this one's rough. No, I was kidding. What do we have here for the next one? We're talking ADP 150 to 200.
Let me see if I can. Does that Ryan? Zoom? Yeah, here we go.
Yeah, but you cut off some of the bottom.
That's okay. I can scroll. Jesus. All right. So, yeah, that's a bit much, isn't it? All right. So, next group is we'll talk about 150 to 200. Given the shape of this board and how it looks on the YouTube screen, that's because it's very tall, which means there are a lot of hitters going in this 150 to 200 range. The biggest thing for me, looking at this, this is where that shortstop cliff happens, where we have talked all draft season about. And again, we just said like there are some middle infield targets we like late. But if you can make it work, getting your second shortstop here as your middle infield is also a viable option. But I mean, if you also wait and you don't have a shortstop at this point in the draft, again, things happen in drafts. You're going to not have all your positions filled by pick 200. I mean, that's just the sheer math of it. You need to get your shortstop by like pick. It's always the Dansby Swanson cliff, right? At 181, he's going right now. A few shortstops going ahead of him that some of us we've talked about. That we've talked about. Jeremy Pena, I know you like a lot. I can get on board with that. Anthony Volpe. Xander Bogaerts, Mason sore wrist win at 153.
Better than a rib cartilage that tore in the postseason, so that's good.
Full agree on that one, but but there are some good shortstops here where ending with Dansby Swanson, I think if you don't have your shortstop by then, it's going to get tough.
Yeah, 100%. That's been our takeaway pretty much since we first looked at the shortstop position. And it has not changed outside the fact they're all going higher than when we first looked at them. Somehow Dansby isn't moving as much as the other two, but they're all getting put like wins almost in the next tier over, which it's gotten me off a win, honestly. Like my shares of win have gone down tremendously in recent drafts.
Well, he got pricey. He got found out.
That's what I'm saying. Like he got pushed up so much. Like I'm out. I'll take my Peñas. I started getting a ton of Swanson in recent drafts, and I'm all about the Swanson. Like that's a 2020 guy that could hit 260 if things start clicking again. So I'm with you on that. So yes, the shortstop cliff is one that stands out a ton. The other one that I took a note on is for me, I want to have my third outfielder for sure. I kind of want to have my fourth outfielder by the end of this range. This is one of those, like, I really like this outfield range. We're kind of, we haven't reached the Platoonville yet, which not all the outfielders in that previous section were Platoonville, but we're getting close to that, if that makes sense to people. We like, you have Elliot Ramos down here at ADP 194. Big fan of what he can bring to the table. But you have a bite, because I think he is for decent average to go with his power and whatnot. But you have like your Profars and Nimmo who are hurt but could be good. Victor Robles, you have your questions, so on and so forth. There's a ton of outfielders in this range. Like almost close to half of this range is outfielders. And that just makes me want to pepper this range with a couple outfielders potentially and a shortstop. So probably not a pitching range for me so much when I look at this. This is probably, I'm not alone. That's why so many hitters go in this range. But I really want to approach the outfield because besides Platoonsville, it's a lot of at least 3 to 4 category outfielders still, which that also drops off in the next section of the draft.
I certainly like the 170 pocket of like Nick Castellanos, Tommy Edman, Taylor Ward, ending up with a lot of those guys in on my team. So I like those. And they've typically been, yeah, like my third outfielder on a lot of my squads. I'm kind of like zigging when I guess others, or I'm whatever the hell the word is, zig and zag. Because this is a hitter heavy pocket, but there's not like a whole lot of hitters at LA. It's a catcher dead zone.
Your second baseman's right there.
Well, yeah, that's good. That's a good point. There's if you want to go decent second baseman that can run, this is where you can get that with the mascot Luis Rengifo at 170. My guy, I guess, Andrés Giménez, 161. If you believe in Bryce Turang, you can get a boatload of steals, and maybe you like, I mean, the 250, if Bryce Turang, he's projected at 250, if that happens, that's not too bad. And then Xander Bogaerts, who a lot of people don't like, but I think he's rock solid floor and good batting average. So this is true. I've been ending up with a shortstop here, a second baseman on a bunch of my teams. But it is also a definite catcher dead zone. It's Austin Wells and Gabriel Moreno, and that's it.
Yeah. So, and Austin Wells keeps going up with the Stevenson news. So,
right. As but, other catchers get hurt, yeah, he's going higher. So, that is also probably a takeaway for us, I know, is we definitely want to have our first catcher before this group because there's nothing in this group. And then we just said in the 200 to 250 group that we just talked about, that's where we want to get our second catcher. So if you're doing kind of a draft checklist for hitters, I think in a two catcher league, you got to get that first catcher by 140, 135. It looks like looking ahead to the next group.
A couple other things I'll reiterate. This is another pocket with not a ton of power compared to where we're going to head shortly. So again, driving home the point, get your power early. Cause there's still a bunch of speed guys, like a lot of 20-plus, 15-plus speed guys, but the power, not so much, especially when you're counting on Michael Toglia to take that step, which who knows what happens there. Tyler O'Neill, does he stay healthy? There's a ton of them, and some of them are just barely 20, not to mention Goldschmidt's pretty much the only first baseman. Like, that's the first base cliff we always talk about. You either take Goldie or above, or you just wait at the position, it feels like. So a couple of other takeaways from me on this range.
Yeah, it's the power of these boards. Look at the group on the left power compared to the group on the right power. Power will start to get plentiful once we get to 150 and earlier. But yeah, like you just said, this is a power dead zone. I mean, with Oldschmidt leading the pack at 23 projected homers.
Says it all.
That speaks volumes. Yes. I mean, I would take the over on Eugenio Suarez's 22 home run projection personally, but again, the projections are what they're saying. And yeah, like maybe like Michael Toglia's power, but everyone knows my thoughts on Michael Toglia's batting average. Like that's rough. So it's, I know a kind of broken record, but beating that point home power, it basically disappears around pick 150. It's pretty wild.
I'm going to kind of transition us to the next one here, but if you stay on 150 to 200, like I said, you got a handful of steals, guys. As you transition to 100 to 150, the first half or the bottom half, I guess, you have steals. Then steals start to disappear in the next range. But you have a lot more 20-plus home run guys in this next pocket. So If you're ready to move on, I just wanted to, it was a transition of watching the steals and the color changes, which make these bloom boards great. Sure. What do you see in pockets or picks 100 to 150 when it comes to the hitters?
Yep. This is where you want to prioritize the power because especially, yeah, like you said, that 100 to 110 group for hitters, maybe it's just like a random grouping, but it's nobody's projected for 10 bags. Brian Reynolds, Christian Walker, Will Smith, Riley Green, Bregman, Vientos, Berger, Bengaliers. Like, I don't know, Dante Bichette, he's projected for, or Dante Bichette. Dante Jesus. Bichette. Bichette.
That was awesome.
Oh, man.
Projected for 11?
Projected for 11.
When's he going to do that?
We may or may not agree on that one. But, yeah, this is where you want to prioritize your power, in my opinion, just because you can get the power, but you can also get it with decent batting average. And, again, biggest thing when you're kind of looking at draft prep and planning these out, you don't want to kind of tailor your plan around one or even two guys because you never know when someone else is going to take them. So I think you just need to look and say, hey, this is where I can get power because Christian Walker, Reynolds, Bregman, Vientos, Berger, Chapman, Adolis Garcia are all available. And I will most likely at least end up with one of those guys. And so I think this is the spot you want to do that. And yeah, very, very good call out that speed kind of flips here, at least from the like 100 to 120 group. It's just yep. not there. It's just, I guess kind of like a random part of the draft where it's not there, but I think it just bolsters the point that you want to go with a bopper if you can on the hitting side at this point.
Yeah. And it just might be, happenstance, but it might also show like, hey, because even where the speed isn't at, like you mentioned, a lot more 20 plus home run guys and down below, which still has a bunch, but it's people prioritizing that power in your top 120 picks basically. And it's another reason why like I try to prioritize as much 2020 as I can do. I talk about it all the time because yeah, you can get speed later, but if you can get 2020, you can get 4 to 5 category guys probably. So I try to do it as much as possible. So like a Jason Dominguez I think is tremendous here. He's a guy that I would think is could have met your first round talent situation for your question. I just don't think he qualifies anymore based on his ADP. Correct. Unfortunately, but he's one of those guys that I've been planting my flag and I know I'm not alone in that one, that I think he's in for a big boy season, especially if they decide to lead him off, which is not a done deal but would help tremendously, of course. So I like that a lot, but I put here it's a lot of 25 plus home run bats that I want to get, and that's why Jake Berger is an emphasis of mine. And we've talked about, you know, Bubba's Burgers on this show quite a bit. By the way, Ryan has Bubba Burgers at home, which is freaking hilarious.
Active God.
It's so good. But like first base, third base, he's like a 30 home run dude. It's 250. Like if I can pencil that in right now with the way power disappears, sign me up immediately. Plus that first base, third base flexibility, as we talked about later in this draft, opens up so many doors to what we want to do at other corner spots we mentioned. So to get that thump at either or at the time, I think goes a long way in that. So yeah, big fan of the 25 plus home run bats. And if you compare them with the speed, which not as many do in this range, it's more in the top 100. That's why Jason stands out to me so much. And I want to highlight him. One other guy I will mention, and you can run with this or run somewhere else with on this area. Randy Arozarena has had 2020 for 4 straight seasons. He's projected once again for a 2020 season, even though his batting average is garbage. So it's like I mentioned him in, I think it was a Fantasy Pros article or something recently, and he stands out so much. And it's a guy that's fallen a good amount in ADP this year compared to previous seasons because of the batting average. But the other categories have not really changed in 4 seasons. And that is something that
beast
is pretty valuable.
It's a beast, man. Yeah, Randy Arozarena at 137, I just think. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm wrong a lot, but like he's young enough to turn this around. Price has never been this low. And yeah, you're getting a 2020 guy at 137. So that's pretty sweet. One thing that this isn't really like, this is just my draft style. It's not really like position or category specific, but like around pick 100 to 150 is where I like, I mean, everyone makes fun of me for drafting, you know, geriatric teams and going old and boring and that sort of thing. But like, this is where I can start to take some risks. And I think you've got some options here in terms of like high ceiling, maybe lower floor types. Dylan Cruz is one going at 113. I know Ben Tidd, he did an awesome write-up on his main event draft from this past weekend, posted it on our Patreon on Tuesday. I think today is Tuesday. He drafted Dylan Cruz, I want to say seventh round, something like that. Mm-hmm. There's Jason Dominguez, like you just said. There is also, who's the third name I've been looking at? PCA. PCA, if you believe, I don't believe in PCA, but I'm just saying that, like, that type of player, I think you can really start to, at least the way I draft, this is where I can start to take on a little bit more risk and maybe go for some of these guys who aren't just like your Randy Rosarenas, who I love, but like those old boring types. I start to even veer from that at this point in the draft. So I think you can kind of take those shots, and not too many of them, one or two, you know, and get too wild with it. But if you build a strong foundation, I think around 100, 150, you can start to go for a little bit more ceiling with more risk. Yeah,
totally agree here. And it's weird. Again, I'm just going to be that guy that annoys people probably. But with all these catching injuries, it's weird seeing this pocket here. You have Will Smith, Shea Langeliers, Logan Ohapi, and JTR. And I pretty much only like two out of the four in this range, which it's like this position's getting decimated in my world of targets. Yeah.
It is.
And it turns into, I got to start getting really aggressive in the top 100, which, as we talk about the next round of players, really is not the most comfortable situation. Let's put it that way.
I mean, catcher's been destroyed more than any position, right? With the big three, there's Alvarez, there's Stevenson, and Sean Murphy. Like that. I mean, just from a yes, those guys are out, but catcher's such a delicate position anyway that, we're seeing it with, like you said, the Austin Wells rise. Like, it's kind of a supply and demand type thing. So that is definitely one thing I'm noticing. It doesn't look as deep as it used to be, and the ones that we like are getting moved up by the market these last couple of days with the injuries.
Yeah, not ideal. Glad most of my drafts are done.
Yeah.
All right, let's pivot to the last board of the night, the final two sections of ADP here. We'll start with 50 to 100, which, if you remember our pockets of ADP, we said, hey, this is where we like a lot of pitchers because we take hitters early. Well, when you look at the pocket here we're about to discuss, not a lot of hitters in this range. And there's a reason for that, because this is a pitching-heavy pocket.
Yep.
So, Ryan, when we look at the area from 50 to 100, what stands out to you here?
This is tough, and especially for a hitter roadmap episode, you do have to, we're not talking pitchers tonight, but you do have to keep in mind, like, yeah, where am I taking pitchers? Because in a 15-teamer, you're picking, you have three picks in each of these 50-pick pockets. In a 12-teamer, you've got four. And I know for me, pretty much in this range, out of my three picks that I have in a 15-teamer, two of them are pitchers. Like, I'm pretty much grabbing my closer, whoever that is, in 50 to 100, and I'm probably also grabbing, you know, Aaron Nola. We're gonna just throw that one out there. I'm drafting like a Bailey Ober, Framber Valdez, like all those guys I've kind of talked about, and we'll talk about a little bit on Thursday's show. So you got to kind of keep that in mind, is also, when are you going to take the pitchers that you like? So I've only ended up with one hitter in this group in a lot of drafts. But again, that's kind of what the market's doing as well. That's why this list, like you said, Bubba, is so small. So I don't have a whole lot of takeaways outside of power is even more plentiful with this group. I've been ending up and prioritizing power here. I've been ending up with, I mean, Teoscar Hernandez is in this group. He's starting to rise as he should. I thought Teoscar was the best bargain in early drafts. He's up to 51 ADP. Ending up with a lot of Teoscar, and interestingly enough, another riser is Christian Yelich down at 98. I say down at 98 because he's the bottom of this list or this pocket, but I've been ending up with a lot of Christian Yelich as well because it's batting average, but it's also batting average that doesn't hurt you elsewhere. I want to steal all your thunder, but this is where the last of the premier catchers are going, right? It's Adley at 60, Yiner 62, Wilson Contreras 68, and the big dumper at 83. Yeah, so this is where you're probably starting to go catchers.
Yes, yes. Okay. I usually end up with like a Wilson Contreras share lately, maybe a Yiner share in this range. So I usually have a catcher here. I want to mention another point, and people are probably annoyed with the power situation here. Every player is projected for 18 or more home runs except Yelich, who just entered this world with 14.
That's right.
And I think we can agree a full healthy season of Yelich is closer to 20 home runs than 14. So like, that's why projections have to bake in the health. I get it. That's part of the aging curve. But and we haven't seen a full season in a while, so that's fair as well. But just looking at this chart, everybody but Yelich is projected for 18 or more home runs. So basically most are getting 20 plus bombs, which drives some of the points even more in this situation, which almost makes you sit back. And we'll get to Sean Chard's question in a bit here. I want to finish these two pockets. But this question becomes very interesting in a 12-team league that we'll discuss in a little bit if you want to go real, real hitter heavy and just load up on pop. But, yeah, power stands out a ton. Not as many steals as I'd expect in this range, Ryan. Like, there's still a handful of, like, 12-plus steal guys, but only two players projected over 20 steals. We have two, five,
and one of them's Lou Bob, guys. Luis Robert, yeah. So...
we have at least eight with six or less. Like, this is a tough steals range once again.
And it reinforces the point that you can get steals late. It's kind of, I don't even know if that's lazy to say, but like, you can get steals late. Like, I think you need to prioritize if you're between two guys here. Like, and it's like, do you take a, oh, Jesus. Yeah, there's really not any steals guy. I'll save that for the earliest pocket that we'll talk about next. Do you take a speed heavy guy like a Jarren Duran in your second round, or do you go with someone who is more batting average power? I think you go with more batting average power early in the draft, just because, as we've kind of seen, speed is a lot more plentiful post 200. And so it just fits. It fits a lot nicer that way if you build your team like that.
Another thing I want to mention with Yainer Diaz is I know there's been a lot of like, hey, he's just batting average with not even 20 home run power. But like, even in this pocket, and as you go farther on, a projected 279 batting average is huge.
Huge.
Huge. And so that's why he's going as the third catcher. I have him as the second catcher. It's just, to me, like, I'll take the hit and the steals because, A, we've just said it a million times, you can get steals later. But if like we got a catcher who's hitting 280, gets into hopefully 20 home runs, that means he drives in 80 RBI. Like, he's light years ahead of the other guys. And it goes back to your conversation from like your listener league show about William Contreras and stuff like that, where it just elevates these guys so much more, even though like the overall stat line doesn't look as strong as guys going around him. I just wanted to bring that to light when just looking at this board, that stands out even more so when you look at Yainer Diaz at that point in time.
Very good point. Very good point. Who, names wise, who's your top targets in this
group? What I put down here is I'm all over Seiya Suzuki like usual. I know it's a guy we both like.
Yeah, that's your guy. I've tailed off a little bit this year, but you've held strong with him.
Like, I look at the last two seasons, even with the oblique injuries, you still get like the 20 home runs. You stole 16 bags last year. Don't know if we can fully count on that. I get it, but I think a safe batting average 260 plus, 20 plus homers, maybe we get 15 plus steals, maybe we get a full season. Say, because he does not have that oblique injury just yet, thank goodness. So there's just kind of a few things that we haven't seen a full Seiya is what I'm getting to. And if we can get a full Seiya, I think he's kind of a discount in this range. Could be wrong. 81 still pretty high, but I think you're going to get a lot more than you pay for.
Yep. I see it.
So that's where I'm at there. Who you then, of course, Junior Caminero's here, who I'm just extremely high on as a breakout guy, but he's been getting pushed up so much, I haven't been getting as much of him as late. I'll be very, very open and honest on that one.
Yeah, for me, it like I said, it's been Teoscar, it's been Yelich. Haven't had to really, and typically, like, Wilson Contreras has been one of my favorites. Yep. I have been shopping in this top like six catcher pool just because reasons and that sort of thing. So I've started to turn around a little bit on the law dog. 54 law though, he's pricey. So what about your guy who's no longer your guy, Junior Caminero? 75.
I just mentioned him.
Yeah, that's right. Never mind. You
yeah, I don't have him as much anymore because he's getting too expensive. Right, I was all in at like 105, 120 in that range. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. 75. It's like, I'm pretty much, I'm not looking at my shares, but top of my head, in this range. I know Seiya is one of my most rostered players, period. But Wilson, Contreras, Seiya, and now he's in this range. I've been getting a lot of Yelich of late, too. So, like, those are the three main hitters I've been getting to this range and peppering at will.
I've even done drafts where I've taken none of these hitters, though, too. Because if you start four hitters, yeah, like I did in Tout, you gotta pivot back.
You do. And the pitching gets pretty good in this range, as we will find out on Thursday. That's for darn sure. All right, let's go to the top 50 on the board. So we work backwards. We know, folks, get power early, get power, get batting average. Whoa, look at the board, Ryan. What do we see in this range?
Yeah, of course, a lot of green. Never mind. A lot of green, of course, because these are the best guys. Just kind of summing things back up, this is probably another reason why I am not taking Ellie De La Cruz fourth, right? Do you need 51 Bingo. Projected steals out of your first round guy that comes with just 25 home runs? I know that's a good number, but first round, it's not. And a 254 batting average. It's just, you can get those resources later on. And so even like, I struggle with Corbin Carroll a little bit now.
For the batting average part, I get it.
Yeah. Just because of the lower batting average and the lower home runs, though I might take the over on 23. But if I have a this or that between Corbin Carroll and Kyle Tucker, Gunnar Henderson, I'm probably going the latter two. It even makes me be okay with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I haven't been haven't had a ton of, but at near the end of the first round, I think he can do that as well. So those are kind of the big things the biggest thing with this group. And again, all these guys are good. They come with varying degrees of risk. I'll scroll down as well for some folks who are watching. We had a question about James Wood. He's down at 46. All these guys don't fit in one screen because there are so many hitters being taken. But this is not breaking news or anything. This is where you get that elite batting average. There's a ton of really good batting average here. And it comes with all the other goodness that comes with it. That's why you're taking these guys at these early picks. That's why I'm loading up in a lot of my drafts with pretty much every draft. I've started with three hitters, sometimes four to start the draft.
Yep, hitting heavy, hitting early, hitting often is the way to go in my mind. Could be totally wrong. We shall see. But, when you look at this range, and I agree with the care, I've had that sentiment in my head of late, especially with – I have so many shares already, and I love Corbin Carroll. I think, you know, a healthy season, the projections, again, they're going off of what they've seen. Who says he can't hit 270? Like, that at least doesn't crush you in that regard. Yep. With the power and speed. And so you're kind of – I'm speculating there, but I'm with you. I've been getting some of those anywhere from 6 to 8 in my last couple drafts. And like, if J Ram's not available, who's the go-to? I've never been a big Soto guy, but then I look at it and go, okay, I can get steals later. His average, his power, like, it's pretty undeniable what he can do in that regard. And that power and that average just destroys Carroll. Like, destroys him. So, like, do you flip? I've had that discussion. There's a reason I've always loved Kyle Tucker, because he does everything. All five categories. And so that's the guys going around Carroll's why I'm bringing them up. And it's a great point you make. And it's one of those that I always laugh after we do all these exercises. I'm like, man, I should have waited to do my drafts now, knowing what I know now compared to what I thought I knew earlier. Cause like even the Vlad comments you make, like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is much more appealing doing all the work we've done so far. Like, stands out so much more for obvious reasons. Like, I'd have him over Yordan for sure. And he goes ahead of Yordan, but like, those two guys used to be comped together at the beginning of the draft season. Now they've separated out a little bit on the ADP board. So I'm with you in those regards. And it definitely, in the first 3-4 rounds in a 12, I start paying attention much more to average in this point, because you can get power. There's a ton of 25-plus, 30-plus home run projected guys here. Get enough speed around here if you want a 5-category guy, but you don't have to your point you made earlier. Lindor has been a popular one of mine, because we've always talked about shortstop. You almost want to get one for sure in this range. Like, you want at least one outfielder, if not two outfielders, and one shortstop in my mind. That's kind of how I look at this range. That's how, if you're making four picks, I usually want at least one shortstop and two outfielders. That's kind of where I'm looking at. And again, could be just the wrong approach, but I want my Lindor. I want one of the elite shortstop, and I want a couple of those elite outfielders when I'm knocking it out.
Right, because it's so easy to look at the shortstop list of rankings and say, oh, damn, you know, that top nine or whatever, that top 10, they're all really good. Shortstop's deep. Well, there are nine shortstops that go in the first 47 picks. Yeah, they all go right here. So while, yes, it's deep, they also go like hotcakes. And if you two things can not be true at the same time. It can be deep, but they also run out quickly. So just because it's deep doesn't mean you wait till after pick 50 to get your shortstop. I agree. I think you need to get your shortstop here. It's a very strong class of shortstop with a ton of well-rounded production. Lean into that, get your one. And then like we talked about earlier in the show and later in the draft, you've got some decent options at middle or even that Swanson, Dansby Swanson shortstop cliff to make that your middle. So I like that. And I'm on board with your outfield call as well. Just because it, like we said, once you get to that 200, 250 range, outfield's rough and you got to have five of them and you might as well get started here. So, I like that plan of attack as well. And there's also like not too many guys, like they're almost all shortstops and outfielders.
Yeah.
Like, there's the three first basemen, right? There's Vlad. Well, my guy Freeman might not be in this group for much longer at this pace. Probably out for the season when I wake up Friday morning.
Where does he go in the Wednesday main if he morning. Doesn't play the first two games? That's going to be wild. Jeez. Third round Freeman?
I'd probably say fourth. I don't know.
That's crazy. But
depends on the quotes. Crazy, depends on the quotes. But there's also just not like there's not many like third. Like there's J-Ram that works, but there's like Austin Riley, Manny Machado. There's just Rafi Devers, who neither of us, I speak for you, but neither of us are taking at this price. It's plentiful shortstop outfield, and you just need to, I think, lean into it, take the medicine, and get those guys because those positions get tough pretty quick.
Yeah, and I'm with you. And it also goes to the points like we made in the next round. Like it's maybe an outfielder and say, yeah, you might take Teoscar or whatever, but then it's like Wilson Contreras is pitching. Like we're going that direction. And then he's like, we worked backwards, but now you can see why we worked. Like you go to the next round, we want, second base or whatever. Like it all comes together in that regard. And that's why you hammer it early here. Like Wyatt Langford was a guy I liked a ton, but now he's going super early. Went 17th in a main the other day. Kevin Hastings mentioning in the chat here. Jeez. So I wanted to throw it out, and Kyle mentioned his name. I talked about Rafaela FOMO kind of. I have insane James Wood FOMO right now. I have no shares of James Wood.
Same.
I tried to get him in my last 12 team. I literally was on deck, had him queued up over the top rope. I told you ADP went out the window there, that he went like 10 picks higher than this. It was nuts. James Wood is one of those guys that has the skill set. We saw it get better last season. Having a monster spring, could take that next step. Like there's so many things to positively say about James Wood, and I have zero shares, and I'm not happy about it.
Then you would take James Wood, maybe straight up, but definitely at cost over Wyatt Langford, correct?
100% right now, yes.
Yeah.
For two reasons, the cost, and I have so much Langford, it's called diversification at this point, and to cover my FOMO and on that one. So a couple factors, but I think they're very, very similar. And I think Wood has more power than Wyatt Langford, honestly.
Real quick, this is, I think, one important thing for folks drafting this next week is mention all these guys are good, but I don't have this on the rundown, but I think you need to know who you don't want in this group, like who are your fades. Yeah. I think for me, while you kind of think about it, for me, it's Corey Seager at shortstop. Yeah. I think we just said kind of get a shortstop, you can get power, but I think you need to get some speed if you're going to go early and get shortstop here. Seager sets you back there. I would also fade Jarren Duran. I just think you're buying off a career year. The price is so good that you're passing up like a Trey Turner, Jackson Merrill, King William, Contreras, those types. And it's a speed first, speed heavy, I'll say, not speed first, because Jarren Duran does other things. But again, it's that speed heavy profile that you don't have to have in this group. And then Ellie De La Cruz, I'll throw in there as well. At number four, I already talked about why.
Yeah, I'm off of all of them. So to add a couple more, I have not had a Jazz Chisholm share yet this year.
Also a speed heavy profile,
but it's one of those, like, we've seen him healthy one time. I'll take anybody can get hurt, but the guys around him I feel a little more comfortable with, one might say. So he's a guy I have no Jackson Merrill. I think he's probably more of a floor than a ceiling to me right now. And then it's nothing against him, I guess, but Ketel Marte because I'd rather wait on second base.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's fair. There's better. There's really good options around Ketel Marte. You're passing up a lot of good production if you take him. And yeah, we have said earlier in this show, there's a lot of second base that we like later.
So. Yeah, we just knocked off almost a fifth of the first round right there. That's kind of something that helps going into it, knowing to pivot around. It's not a bad thing by any means when it's all said and done. All right, final thoughts on the boards before I got a couple questions in the chat here to bring up.
No, I just hope this exercise of us kind of talking through this, working from back to front. You may not agree with the players, the assessment of the pool, whatever, but just the process of doing that. I think if you've got some time to prep for your drafts this final week, I think it's a really good way to do it. And you learn some things kind of going through it. So I will post, I'll pretty much just probably post our show notes. It's got the boards and the notes that we're taking through this show to the Patreon, and folks can look at it there and go for it. So I don't know. I love doing this exercise. It's fun just working your way through a draft and trying to put that puzzle together, even though knowing any single draft can change a ton, but it's fun, man.
Yeah. Looking forward to drafting on Sunday with all our listeners who just listen to the same show. That'll be quite productive for us too.
We'll all be at 40% capacity by that point.
Yep. Sean Chard in the chat here says, question, as a bold strategy, perhaps in a 12 team or over a 15, going 10 straight hitters or maybe 9 in a closer and then attacking starting pitchers. How much do you dislike that alternative strategy? It's kind of what I did in my Beat Bubba draft. Didn't have a starting pitcher until pick 9.
So. Yeah, and I didn't like it for
it. I loved it. Loved it.
I didn't like it. I think I don't think you can neglect half the categories in the first 9-10 rounds. If you decide to do it, and I mean, I don't know. I'm not like some legendary player. If you decide to do it, you need to like volume the hell out of pitchers and make sure, you know, you're just throwing as many darts as you can and hoping that some hit for that strategy to work. I would also make, I think Sean put this in his question too, but I would make room for at least closer. A closer in those first 10 rounds, just so you have some saves.
I'd say I'm good with getting like 5 hitters in the first 6 rounds with a closer and then getting like 3 or 4 starters right after that. So you still leave with like 3 starters, a closer, and 6 hitters in the first 10 rounds. But those 6 hitters you get early can be like legit 20, 30 home run guy, whatever. You can do some damage with that early on. So I think at least in 12s, you can definitely make that work. Kyle McPadden, has something that says, I really like waiting on pitching this year, but I'm struggling with the pick range of 40 to 65, where I'm really only finding outfielders I like, but I don't want to fill up outfield so early, looking at outfielders in round 2 and 3. It kind of goes to what we were saying. Agreed. Once you get to like pick 50, lots of pitching to like.
Mm-hmm. I think you just need to, instead of trying to reach and grab someone you don't like in that range, plan around it. Find some outfield targets you want to take in the first 2 to 3 rounds. Find some outfield targets you want to prioritize, you know, starting pick 100, 150 and plan around it. So
another question from Kyle here, shallow 10 teamer. How do you like a Merrill Jazz 2-3 starting off with pick 2 and Witt?
I don't know. I don't like it that much, honestly. Yeah. Even in a 10-team shallow, I think still in the early rounds, you still need to get solid bankable production. I think you can lean to more ceiling and that sort of thing in shallower leagues in the middle rounds. But I think early on, I don't really care what size league it is. I want a little bit more of a track record, both in terms of like MLB service time with Merrill and injury track record with Jazz.
Yep. I agree. Jazz, I'm a little more okay with, I guess, in the 10 teamer, because you can still get plenty of position around it. Jackson, I'm just out on, and maybe I'm wrong.
Are
you?
Yeah. I don't mind. I actually don't mind Jackson Merrill.
I can't take it for me.
I'm taking Freddie Freeman over these guys who has like a punctured lung. So.
I just can't get what Sammy Reed said on my Padres preview out of my head with Jackson Merrill. So he's very, very – look, he's a good player, but the ceiling's just not there with him right now. So We'll see. Could be. We could all be wrong. We could all be wrong. Could all. He could just crush it and be a top five pick next year. Who knows? All right, Ryan, we're going to wrap it up there. Again, I'll give you one last chance. Any final thoughts before we do pitching on Thursday?
We'll do pitching Thursday. We'll also do as part of our Thursday show. Looks like we did this last year. We'll do an early FAB preview for, I know a lot of leagues run their first FAB period on this coming Sunday. And there has been a lot of movement, especially if you drafted in January, February, whatever. So we'll do kind of a Bloom Board style. It won't be our normal FAB preview type thing with schedules and that sort of thing. But we'll do pitcher roadmap, which won't be as complex just because, you know, there's not categories, that sort of thing to try and balance as much on the pitching side. So we'll throw in a little FAB preview Bloom Board at the end of Thursday's show to hopefully get you all ready for those early FAB period runs, which, like I said, in my OC, I have four holes to fill already. So I will selfishly be prepping for our Thursday show because of that. And it won't be live because we will be sleeping, hopefully.
Yes, hopefully. Yeah, pray to God. We will be. But all right, we'll wrap it up there. Make sure y'all follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Entrick, and this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 225. Catch y'all next time.